This is an iHeart podcast.
Newton Group Transfer. They are here to help you if you're stuck in a timeshare. These stories from people who have these timeshares and can't get out of them, they're shocking. These timeshare companies, not all of them, but so many, they get their hooks into you and you can't give them up. You can't give them up. Or they'll do things like they charge you thousands of dollars. One girl, she got past her timeshare when her mother passed away. She gets past the timeshare, doesn't want the timeshare, doesn't use the timeshare. They tell her she can get out of it for $4,000. She has to come up with a $4,000 check. This is not right. It's unjust. And Newton Group Transfers is here to help you. If you are in a timeshare and want out or know someone who is, call 888-845-3773. That's 888-84-JESSE or go to timesharejesse.com. Newton Group Transfer. They will help you out.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
You remember when I told you yesterday about the jungle and what the jungle is like? And don't worry, I'll get to that story today. I'll finish that story today. And it's an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, 877-377-4373, 877-377-4373, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. But remember what I told you about the jungle? About how it smells, how it's wet all the time. You are wet all the time. Various itches and bites and skin rashes are not the exception. They are the rule. It's just how pervasive they are. Where they are, you're going to have them. The sweat and sticky heat, the extra misery of bugs. Have you ever woken up in your lifetime with 6 or 7 flies crawling across your face? I have. Oh, and did I mention on top of the bugs, the bites, the stings, the rashes, the misery, did I mention the runs? I'm not trying to be vulgar here. I'm not trying to ruin your mood. But again, one of those things that is the norm, not the exception. You see, disease thrives in that climate. It just does. It's miserable. Now, I want you to imagine you're not doing Marine Corps training in that environment. I want you to imagine somebody digs a 12-foot deep, 12-foot wide, 12-foot long pit in the hole in the ground. They dig this hole in the ground in the jungle. They drop you in it with nothing else inside the hole, and they place a cage over the top of it. There's no cover, sun, rain. There's no bug guards to make sure the skeeters don't get in there. There's nothing preventing that poisonous snake from curling up on your chest as you huddle in the corner trying to get some sleep in the middle of the night. When it rains, and oh, it rains, you're going to lay there in the mud and the bugs and the filth and your own bodily fluids. Are you grossed out yet? Are you mortified about that existence? Now, I want you to picture this. I want you to picture being in that hole when you didn't do anything wrong. We'll come back to this. France and Germany have a bit of a complicated history. And actually, I'm not talking about World War I and World War II. That is not the beginning of the hostilities with France and Germany. It's just one of those things about neighbors. You got France in the west, you got Germany right next door in the east. Two big European powers, although Germany obviously wasn't always named Germany. Butted right up against each other, constantly competing, and that's a problem. And you have religious divisions in Europe, not just Germany, major ones in France, and that's a problem. And you have societies, remember our French Revolution show, trying to decide how their country's going to be run, and that's a problem. And these problems are really adding up. Now, we need to do something really quickly here. We need to talk about the anti-Semitism in France at this time, late 1800s. Not Germany, not Adolf Hitler, France, late 1800s. Why it existed and where it came from. There was extreme apprehension about Germany at this time. Extreme apprehension. And there was extreme anger at the Jews. Now, why was there extreme anger at the Jews? Have you heard of the Panama Canal? The Panama Canal is essentially exactly what you think it would be. It's a big canal connecting the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, way down south there in Central America. Several countries have tackled this project, including us. But in the late 1800s, France decides to tackle this project of the Panama Canal. The reason several countries have tried to tackle the Panama Canal, and it wasn't just one big construction company a few weeks, hey, we connected it, we're good to go, is because it is an absolute living hell to build the Panama Canal. The ground sucks. The cave-ins are everywhere. It is thick, thick tropical jungle full of venomous snakes, venomous spiders. I already described what jungle life is like to you. And oh, did I mention malaria and yellow fever everywhere because the mosquitoes are rampant. France decides, and this is, I'm glossing over many details as I do because I don't want to bore you. France decides, we are all in on the Panama Canal game, baby. This is going to be a huge moneymaker. And obviously it is one day. We know that now once it's done. They saw that it was going to be a huge moneymaker. And what they did across France was collect money to build it. And I don't just mean they went and knocked on the door of the closest billionaire in France and said, hey, would you mind financing this? I mean, they solicited funds from 800,000 people to build the Panama Canal. They say over 15,000 of them were single women. I mean, you didn't even have to have much money, and you would donate to the Panama Canal to give that money back. And what if one day they all came back to you and said, all the money you gave us is gone. I want you to picture how much $300 million is in the late 1800s, what that's worth today. Essentially, they went over there. They were not equipped to handle this construction project. Over 20,000 workers died. 20,000 Frenchmen died trying to build this thing. At one point, it was 200 a month. The French government kept lying to people about the worker conditions so more workers would go. They'd go over there trying to make their fortune, be wiped out, and then France comes right back, says we are abandoning the Panama Canal, we can't finish it, and all you upper, middle, and lower class people, your money's all gone. Sorry. And then people start to hear about the corruption. You see, it wasn't just some bad construction conditions. As is so often the case in these major construction projects, when huge amounts of money is changing hands, bribes are being given and taken, and I don't mean one or two, and I don't mean a little satchel of $100 bills under the table. Millions. And then once the scandal starts to shake out, two of the main architects happen to be Jews. Uh-oh. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly. You're listening to The Jesse Kelly Show.
I have a confession to make. This is a secret, so don't tell my children. But we have decided to move forward and buy a dog. Why am I agreeing to buy a dog? Because there's nothing better to keep your family safe than owning a dog. That's why I agreed to it. I care about my family's safety. Now, why would I, somebody who doesn't even want a dog, get a dog just for protection? Because you must take all the necessary steps. It is your responsibility to keep your family safe. So, why would I leave my internet unsecure? Get ExpressVPN. Start protecting your family online where they are very, very much in danger in this age. Go to expressvpn.com/Jesse. That's expressvpn.com/Jesse. Get 3 months free on a 1-year package. Couple Jewish dudes were at the center of this massive bribery thing. And understand how big that is at the time, because remember, Catholicism is huge in France and Europe in general right now. And I'm not taking a shot at my Catholic brethren, but at this time in history, there is a real Catholic versus Jew thing. It's big. We've talked about it before. Much of the Catholic doctrine at this time said you were not allowed to loan money to people and charge interest. It was viewed as being a sin against God. Jews had no such compunction when it came to loaning out money to people who weren't Jews, which again caused much of a rift too. Jews would loan money to anybody and charge interest. They wouldn't loan to other Jews and cause interest, which created even more suspicion. But as such, because their religion didn't bar them from doing so, they took over the banks. Now you're a poor country. We've talked about this for other reasons before, but you're a poor country or you're out of a job. You look around and Jews, who are a minority of your population, control all the banking jobs. Does it create resentment? You bet it does. You bet it does. Of course. Now, it gets worse. France and Germany, again, at each other's throats, have themselves a little war called the Franco-Prussian War. There's this area in France / Germany, I don't even know what to call it anymore, called Alsace-Lorraine. It's actually Alsace and Lorraine. It's two different areas, but it's virtually the same. Just know that. It's right on that France-German border. It is not a new phenomenon that they are each wanting this area. They've been quibbling over this thing since the 1500s. It is a choice, cherry neighborhood, and I'm not going to get into the disputes on it. It's too endless. Just know this. France kind of rightly thinks it's part of France and has been part of France for a long time. Germany kind of rightly thinks these people kind of speak German. These are German. We want to unite all the Germanic peoples. So it really should be ours. And that was a big deal back then. We are creating a new Germany. Germany was kind of a new country. Well, a very new country. Yes, let's bring in all the Germans. France, remember, France is in the middle of all kind of this colonizing stuff. Has a little war with Germany. And France, who was very much in possession of Alsace-Lorraine, loses the Franco-Prussian War and loses Alsace-Lorraine to Germany. I am going to try to put this in words you can understand and I can understand, and even this will not do it justice. I want you to imagine we fight a war right now, and it's kind of comical, but we fight a war right now with Canada. Let's say we've been tense with Canada. We fight a war with Canada. We lose that war with Canada, and Canada takes over all of the Northeast. New York is Canadian, Maine Canadian, Massachusetts Canadian, and all the history, all the U.S. history that goes with it is now part of Canada. Your map says it's Canadian. That's as best I can do to explain to you what it would have been like for them. See, we, because we are blessed Americans in this year, don't have any idea what it's like to give and take and lose part of your country and gain part of it back. And we just don't know that. We've never been taken like that. All we've done is take. We've never, I mean, our day will come. It comes for everybody. We've never been there yet. How much resentment do you think it would be, there would be nationally, if we're watching Canadians fly the Canadian flag over New York City? If we watch Canadians tear down a John Adams statue in Massachusetts and put up their own monuments, how much do you think that would grind on you? It would grind on me. A lot. So that's the situation. Now, we have a family, a Jewish family by the name of Dreyfus. They live in this Alsace-Lorraine area during the Franco-Prussian War, and a young man at the age of 10, when that war is concluded, his name is Alfred Dreyfus. Once that war is concluded and Germany takes over, that family is given the heave-ho, and they were a very well-to-do family in the Alsace-Lorraine area, and now all of a sudden you look around, and the Germans are running things now, and they say, pack up your stuff, be gone by tomorrow. His family moves to Paris, and now at the age of 10, you watch Germany kick in your front door, take away everything you've ever loved, and your family is destitute. Do you think that has an effect on a young man? Oh, it did. Young Alfred lost his freaking mind. Actually, I take that back. That's a bad way. I meant that as the highest form of compliment. Young Alfred decided, oh, no, that belongs to France. That area belongs to us. I'm going to do something about that. And young Jewish Alfred joins the French military. You need to know this. He was exceptional by all accounts. And there was, remember, tons of anti-Semitism in France at this time and loads of it within the military power structure. And Alfred was still getting promoted time and again because the dude was just a patriot's patriot. Highly, highly intelligent. You, one of those guys, so talented, I don't care how much you hate Jews, we really have to let him advance. Like, we need this dude. Extremely capable. And then one day, somebody finds a torn-up document in a trash can. I'm not going to go into all the details. They bring in this torn-up document, And remember the heat between France and Germany at this time. They hate each other. Remember that Alsace-Lorraine thing? People in Germany, once they won the war, actually openly said, we should not take this from France because it is going to cause a simmering resentment and make another war inevitable. I can't explain how much this territory meant to France. And so they hate Germany, and Germany hates them back, and Germany has spies in France, and France has spies in Germany. You didn't think World War I started just the day Archduke Franz Ferdinand got shot, did you? Those tensions were simmering long before. So they're on the hunt for German spies, and they find this torn-up document in a trash can. They piece it together, and it turns out somebody high up in the French military is a spy for Germany. Uh-oh. This happens to be a document that Alfred Dreyfus would have access to. And you know something else about Alfred Dreyfus? Originally, he didn't even speak French. Remember, this area was a Germanic area, but part of France. He grew up speaking Yiddish and German. And he's a Jew. Do you think they were looking at him with a side eye in the French military a little suspiciously? Alfred's life is about to change, and not for the better. Sometimes I hate being right. And I've been telling you about precious metals from Birch Gold for a while. And what have I been telling you? That all this unemployment and a high stock market, those two things don't go together. And the stock market is going to have some corrections. And here we are today. Stock market's down. This is going to be the norm, not the exception, going forward. While we work out this economic mess, you had better take steps to protect your financial future. You worked hard for that money. Don't lose it all because of some idiots on the stock market. Get with Birch Gold now. Go to birchgold.com/Jesse. That's birchgold.com/Jesse. Get a free 20-page kit. Bone up on your research. Get involved with Birch Gold. Now, you know, I do not like drowning you in names, in details. I think it takes away from storytelling. I think it confuses people. I just don't like it. I find people, when they focus on details like names and locations and things like that, they also get bogged down with them and you lose the story, man. Now you have to understand General Johnson was talking to General Robert who was with Lieutenant Sweaty Pants, and he was with, and it just I'm already confused. Who's General? What are they in charge? What? But there is one name we should acknowledge just for the fact I think the guy's a boss. Charles Picard. He was also born in Alsace-Lorraine. He also joined the French military. So happens he was also an anti-Semite who didn't like Alfred Dreyfus that much. However, again, let's not judge people from our seat today. That was the times. And Charles Picard gets put on this commission to investigate Alfred Dreyfus and figure out if this man really is a German spy and a traitor to France. They have a secret 4-day court-martial where Alfred Dreyfus is brought in, sits in front of this commission, and is interrogated. And I need to stress this because you need to know. One, he was completely innocent, as we'll find out just a little later. Two, they had no evidence whatsoever. In fact, the torn up document was forged. They had nothing. Alfred Dreyfus, it wasn't one of those things, you know, he did a little something wrong. He was the uber patriot. Not only did nothing wrong, loved his country so much, was willing to die for it. And here he is, having risen through the ranks of the military for 4 days getting interrogated. I wish one of those fly on the wall scenes, I wish I could go back and hear that. I wish I could go back and see the look on Alfred Dreyfus's face as he has to sit there in front of these disgusting people, ripping his life apart and knowing that he was innocent while they did it. But he's a Jew. We got a spy. He speaks German. Ah, screw it. It might be him. It might not be. And you know how these things work, right? Tell me if that sounds familiar at all. How these things work are, if you have a commission sitting there and they're trying to torpedo somebody, inevitably you're going to have people on that commission who really genuinely believe this guy is a traitor and a spy. And then you're going to have people who don't really know, but the crowd thinks he's a traitor and a spy. And it sure sounds like he might be. And I don't really want to rock the boat. I mean, that's what everyone else is saying. So, yeah, I mean, he's a traitor and a spy. Now, let me ask you, because we're going to come back to this in a while. Who's the bad guy in that situation? The one who says he's a traitor or a spy and believes it? Or the coward who goes along to get along? I know who I think the bad guy is. I know who I blame. And it's not the one who genuinely believes it. He gets convicted at the end of this court-martial, 4 days. They then publicly announce to France that they have discovered this traitor, this German spy, in their midst. And they have this public ceremony where thousands of Frenchmen come out, scream "Down with Judas." They publicly rip his military insignia off his uniform, and then as a gigantic ceremonial FU, they take his military sword publicly and snap it in two to the cheers of the crowd. If you thought that was as bad as it was going to get for Alfred Dreyfus, you have another thing coming because, well, France had another practice at this time. They had a place right off the northeast coast of South America. There are these little islands there called the Salvation Islands. They are dense, thick, jungled islands, virtually uninhabitable and still not inhabited to this day. And France decided this was an era where this was a practice. Other nations were doing it. If I have to defend them, they decided these places were so awful, uninhabitable, and unescapable, this would be a wonderful place for a penal colony. Now, what's the appeal of a foreign penal colony? One, it's very difficult to escape. Two, that's so far from France. South America? That's so far from France. It really puts people who you don't want the public to think about, it really puts them out of mind. Proximity matters. Proximity matters a lot. Also, a penal colony is relatively cheap to run because you don't need a ton of guards. The island itself is its own prison. You can, and they did, oftentimes let many of them pretty much roam free. Well, you can do what you want. Have fun not dying. So the appeals of the penal colony were many. In France, not only sent their extremely violent criminals there, they sent their political prisoners there. And what's a political prisoner? A political prisoner is somebody who has ideas you're afraid of, somebody you're ashamed of. They sent Alfred Dreyfus to this penal colony, and I need to clarify something about this place. You'll know it as Devil's Island. Maybe you've seen the movie Papillon or read the book Papillon. That's what we're talking about here. It is a violent, horrifically violent place. Imagine an island with relatively few guards where they dump all the political prisoners and murderers and armed robbers. What is that society going to descend into? There was open corruption for families who sent money. The guards would take a portion of the money as it came in. Remember that cage I told you about in the beginning? That's how they would do solitary confinement there. They would throw you in a pit in the ground by yourself. Men went mad all the time. If you want a good idea of how bad Devil's Island really was, you should know this. 60,000 prisoners went through there. You know how many lived to tell the tale? 2,000. The nature of prison, the nature of breaking the law is when you're a lawbreaker, when you're a criminal, any cop will tell you this, any judge will tell you this. Once you start on that path, most of the time, sadly, you never break it. You get out of prison, you generally go right back very, very shortly. That's just the nature of how it works for a lot of reasons. This is one of the prisons in history that was so horrific. The people who went back to France after getting out of there would tell their story to other prisoners, and the prisoners would reform their lives. They were so mortified at the chance they would get sent there one day. That's real fear. If you thought that was bad, it was actually even worse for Alfred.
Miss something?
There's a podcast.
Get it on demand wherever podcasts are found. The Jesse Kelly Show.
Ebb sleep changes things. Sleeping every night just changes things. And let's be frank about something. All sleep is not the same. It's just not. You and I like to imagine, well, I mean, I'm sure it's fine. That stuff. No, I'll just chug some of this cold medication. That'll be good sleep, right? No, it's not good sleep. All sleep's not the same. Get an ebb sleep because you don't ingest anything. It is a wearable device. You put it on. It applies precise, continuous cooling to your forehead, putting you asleep, keeping you asleep, and it's natural sleep, which is the best kind. It's the kind you need. Go to tryebb.com/Jesse. That's tryebb.com/Jesse. Use the promo code Jesse at checkout. Get you $25 off. Go get an ebb sleep. Get one today. See, just sending the completely innocent Alfred Dreyfus. I know I'm going to call him Richard Dreyfus before this thing's over, Chris. I know I will. The actor, you idiot. Never mind. Gosh, Chris. Anyway, just sending him to Devil's Island wasn't enough. They really, really wanted to punish and remove this innocent man from society. I suspect they really just wanted him to die. They wanted to kill him, which I always found that weird. You send him to this deserted island. you ramp up his bad conditions, that you make them somehow worse than other people's bad conditions. Why not just kill him? You're France. You're a major nation. Don't tell me you don't have some people in the 1900 version of speed dial you can call to go slip a knife between his ribs and call it a day. Why not just kill him? And you know what they did with the body back then. You know what they did. Listen to me. Here's what they did. You want to know one of the reasons the island was so difficult to escape? Only a few people ever did it. Because they chucked the dead bodies of the prisoners in the waters around the island, thus giving the sharks around the island a taste for human flesh, and you couldn't get off without getting eaten by a shark. They've run into this in other parts of the world. It took place a lot in Africa. I know Somalia had a big problem with this. It takes place in places where they dump meat and blood into the ocean. The sharks end up piling up there, and they're ravenous. They attack everything that comes in there. That's what they did. So you had a way to get rid of him if you wanted him dead, but they didn't. They just chose to make this totally innocent man's life an absolute living hell. They put him on his own island by himself, gave him a little area where he could exist. They built a gigantic fence around his area so he wasn't even able to look out and see the ocean. All he could do was look up and see the sky. They locked him to his bed at night, gave him only rotten food, no hygiene products, all of his teeth fell out of his skull, and in maybe the cruelest thing I've ever heard in my entire life, they absolutely banned any of the guards from ever speaking a word to him. In total, Alfred Dreyfus would spend 5 years like this and lost his ability to speak. Are you ready to get even madder? They found out pretty much right after they sent him to Devil's Island. They found out who the real spy was. Ferdinand Esther Halsey, or Esther Hazy was his name. He was the actual spy they were looking for. They not only found him, they gave him a quick little court-martial and acquitted him. Now, I mentioned Charles Picard earlier because I think it's really incredible what this man did. He was a fast riser himself in the French army. Remember, he was anti-Semitic too. Remember, he was part of the commission who convicted Alfred Dreyfus. All these things tell you this is probably a bad dude, right? Except he finally gets a hold of information showing Alfred Dreyfus is innocent. Picard sets aside every ambition he's ever had because the entire French military is trying to railroad Alfred Dreyfus at this time, and Picard brings this to his superior and says, we have locked up an innocent man. And his superior says, go away, shut your mouth, never talk about this again. And Picard, in one of those fateful moments that shows who you really are, doesn't go away and doesn't shut his mouth. And in a long, complicated series of events, he gets this information in the hands of outsiders, in the hands of people in the French Parliament, and soon the world knows what has happened to Alfred Dreyfus. When I say the world, I mean the Queen of Britain is speaking out against what they've done to this man. Within France, society itself, they were having essentially a civil war over Alfred Dreyfus. The Catholics, hardcore Catholics, the hardcore anti-Semites were almost evenly divided against other people who were like, yeah, but he's completely innocent. They finally, after a long time in 1899, give Alfred Dreyfus a brand new trial. And they're so committed to this fiction. Do you want to know what happens at the new trial? Hang on, I'll tell you. You know there are only two kinds of cars, right? There are only two kinds. Ones that have had problems and ones that will. So you know you have another car repair coming. You just don't know when it's coming. You don't know how bad it's going to be. I do too. It's horrible. And I got so sick of that day coming around every so often when it does. And just as soon as you feel like you're getting ahead, wham, you get a $500 car bill out of nowhere. And I'm sick of that. That's why I'm so thrilled I found Protect My Car, where I don't have to stress that anymore. If you own a car, truck, or SUV made from 1999 or higher, there's a chance you could stop paying for car repairs. You're not going to know if you qualify until you dial **1244. Again, that's **1244. Make car repair bills a thing of the past. Go to Protect My Car. Alfred Dreyfus gets yet another trial because now the world knows about what France has done to this man. Only France has to try to save face. They have to let this guy off, but you can't let this guy off. So in the ultimate attempt to thread the needle, they convict him again. Forging brand new information again, but then immediately pardon the man. Now, I would love to tell you this story ends here. It does not. I'd love to tell you the story ends happy. It kind of does, but man, it kind of doesn't. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly Show. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Alfred Dreyfus, once he learned to speak again, was eventually, years later, pardoned by France, rank completely restored with the French military, served and served admirably with France during World War I, was even at Verdun. If you've listened to my show for any length of time, you know what an absolute murderous hellhole that place was. Anybody who stepped foot in Verdun has my respect. But eventually died in obscurity in 1935. the worst injustices in the history of the world, time and time and time again, they are not injustices caused by bad people doing bad things. They are caused by good people too scared to fight the bad people and stop them from doing bad things. Bad people have always existed, do exist now, and will always exist. The type of person who will frame Alfred Dreyfus and destroy his entire life just because he's a Jew, that person still exists very much today and will exist tomorrow. The difference between Alfred Dreyfus rotting on a deserted island as his teeth fall out of his skull and Alfred Dreyfus being fully acquitted as the innocent man he is not whether the bad guy exists or not. It is whether or not the good guy has the balls to stand up and do something about it. No, it does not make you a good guy if you recognize the problem, unless you are willing to take risks, to take chances, and do something about it. You are just as, in my opinion, you're actually more guilty than the actual bad guy. Do you want to know why they're now pulling down and burning statues of George Washington? Do you really want to know? Are you sure? They're tearing down and burning statues of George Washington because Republicans have spent the last 2 weeks saying, well, I mean, he was a Confederate general. Maybe we should rename this base. Negotiating with terrorists, negotiating with insurgents who are trying to destroy the United States of America because you want to appear kind and gentle and tolerant will be the end of this nation. And I am sick to freaking death of it. And you know what? I don't care how much this makes you mad. Trump sucks too. I'm so daggone sick of the fact we elected this fighter and he's done nothing but lay down for 3 freaking months. Oh, yes, Dr. Fauci, please destroy the economy. I'm too scared. Oh, we must have some racism. I guess there's a little racism. Here's an executive order against the cops. Go ahead, pass your GOP cop reform bill. I'm sick of this crap. Somebody with some balls in this party, if there's anybody left, stand up and tell all these people to go screw themselves. They are taking it all and you're laying down and letting them because you want to appear nice. Because you want the media to treat you a little bit better. I'm horrified by what I'm seeing. Horrified by it. We are surrounded by every pillar of society trying to, at this very moment, rip up everything that is America. They're destroying the history of this nation in front of our eyes, and we have Republicans supporting it. Do you know? Have you ever talked to somebody from the continental European parts about their relics and the things that were destroyed during things like World War II, things the Nazis destroyed, things the Russians even destroyed? Do you know how much it aches them to this day? To this day, they ache about watching Nazis and commies destroy parts of their history. We didn't even have to be taken over by a foreign army to let it happen here. How pathetic is that? And again, I'm not pointing fingers at the left. The left is disgusting. They want to destroy the United States of America, but we already knew that. Anybody with half a brain knew that. You don't have the spine to stand up against it? Well, I can't appear racist. He did fight for the Confederacy. Let's not appear racist. You people make me sick. I'm so grossed out by the cowardice I see in my own party. I'm so grossed out. And if I sound salty about it, understand this. I am salty about it. I lost my own pastor and church in this whole disaster because of cowardice and pathetic weakness, and I've had enough. I've had enough.
Okay, we better lock down. The doctor said so. Screw your job. We can't have millions die.
We moved right from that of, well, I mean, no, the cops aren't all racist, but obviously some of them are racist. I mean, my word, Tim Scott got pulled over a few times. We better have a new federal law. Jeez, are you, what? A new federal law? Another $2 trillion stimulus bill that Trump is pushing? Another $1 trillion infrastructure bill? Have you people all lost your daggone minds? Is there anyone out there with the guts to stand up and do something about it? All I see right now is fear. That's all the bad news. The good news is this. At many times throughout history, when things look hopeless, things are hopeless. That is the perfect environment for a Charles Picard to step up and say, no, this isn't right. I don't care what you threaten me with. I will not back down. I will not be quiet. I don't care. Is the number. 877-377-4373. I am sorry to get upset on a Friday. You guys know I try to keep it light on a Friday. But I woke up this morning and I saw them tearing down a statue of George Washington now. And man, I tell you, I've just had enough. I have had enough of it. I will take all your phone calls on an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. It doesn't have to be political, although it most certainly can. If you call, I will take them today. Or you can email us. Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. I'm going to take your calls as soon as we get back. Hang on.
You don't have to dip forever. You know that, right? You don't have to smoke forever. And the reason I say it like that is I have been that guy. I've been that guy. I dipped for so long. And what would happen is I would decide I'm going to quit. Oh, it's bad for me. I'm going to quit. I'm a man. I don't need any help. I'm just going to quit cold turkey. And I would fail time and time and time again. I tried things like the patch. That didn't work. Gum, sunflower seeds. I tried it all. It's just a matter of finding the right thing to help you quit. That's Jake's Mint Chew. Go, put in your dip. Just make sure it's Jake's Mint Chew. It's tobacco-free. It's nicotine-free. It's even sugar-free. And I highly recommend, just a personal choice, I highly recommend their CBD pouches because it really helps take that extra edge off. Go to jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse at checkout. When you do that, you get 10% off.
This is an iHeart podcast.